You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus from New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening. I'm Al Vohner, and this is The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us this evening. Many times in the course of the year, and many of you who have been longtime listeners to the station know that we cover topics that always seem to have an upbeat flair to it. But that's not always the reality in life. And many times, stories that involve tragedy are also part and parcel of this life that we all live. And whether we've had to experience it directly or whether we've experienced it through friends, close friends, family members, we all know somebody that has been through tragedies in one way or another. And this evening, I'll be speaking with author Edward Jones. His new book is Medication, Mental Illness, and Murder. And this is a story, a true story, by the way, of a young family. Back in 2006, David and Kim Crespi had two twin daughters, 5 years of age. At the time, David Crespi was dealing with depression and was on antidepressants, et cetera. And for whatever reason, took the lives of his two young daughters. And and kudos to Ed Jones, and we'll be talking with Ed in a few moments, of putting this heartfelt story between the pages of a book, and talking about not only the tragedy itself, but many of the circumstances surrounding all of this. So as they say, without further ado, Edward Jones, welcome.
Thanks so much. It's great to be on. Thank you,
Ed. Like I said at the outset, this couldn't have been an easy book to write. It's real. It happened. It was a horrific tragedy, especially for the family. But most importantly, and correct me if I'm wrong here, the intent is not only to tell this heartfelt story, but also to let people know that there's something else going on here, and it may be the use of antidepressants. Coming off of COVID, I know many people, they had been sheltered in their homes for weeks and months. People couldn't get out. People had to be masked up. Couldn't go back to work. Everybody had some layer of depression that set them back. But some, in this case, David Crespi, obviously had something more going on. But What I'm trying to say is, how difficult was this for you to write this book?
It was very difficult, very, very emotional. And the intent of the book, the real intent of the book is to hopefully help save lives and to help other families avoid tragedies similar to this one. But it was difficult to write because my wife and I were just getting to know Kim and David Crespi ourselves, and this was around November, December of 2005, and I got word that David was suffering from depression, like right around Christmas time, and I myself have battled through three different bouts with clinical depression myself. I had by that time, at least. So I told my wife to reach out to Kim Crespi and tell her that, I've been through it, and if David needed some kind of somebody to lean on, I'd be there yesterday, to be there for him. And we got word back that David had experienced this before, but they felt like he was under the care of some of the best people he had ever been under the care of. So then on January 20th, 2006, we got a phone call that said David, who was at home on leaves with his twin daughters and his wife, Kim, while Kim was out getting a haircut, David stabbed his twin daughters to death. Mm. And so I hear that, and I almost had a form of survivor guilt or something like that. It was like, oh my God, if I had been there for him, could I have said something that could have changed something? No. But anyway, so I I of course, like, looked at all the reporting that was coming out of the Charlotte Observer at the time. And they revealed that David was on a cocktail of different drugs. Prozac, Trazodone, Ambien, and he had just been switched from Ambien to Lunesta. And later, I discovered that after he killed the twins, he picked up the phone and called 911. And this is in the book. First thing he says is, I just killed my two daughters. And it's almost like he didn't even know what he did. Mm. And you hear a young woman on the other end of 911 operators say immediately, sir, are you on any medications? Right. Yes. What kind of medications? Antidepressants. Well, that 911 call was, I have to be careful here, but it was suppressed by the powers that be, and it was not released until 2 months after David Crespi was sentenced to two consecutive life terms without parole. Mm. So anyway, and Kim Crespi is a dear friend, and she's the hero of the book, and she provides the light in the book. She I interweave her contemporaneous journal entries and how she dealt with all this through the book, and that is the spine of the book. She's the hero of the book. She provides the light in the darkness.
In the liner notes, that caught my eye, Edward, because it says right in the liner notes that, you know, after the killings, Kim, and probably for the rest of her life, is going through an unimaginable journey of trauma, suffering, but eventually, and this is what really caught me, eventual forgiveness. So, I mean, so she can look at David and say, I know that it wasn't you, that at that moment. At that moment, when you killed our two daughters, it was not you in the right frame of mind, right?
That's exactly right. And yes, she has completely forgiven him. So have all three of his surviving children. Absolutely, yeah. And there are numerous cases similar to this one that we could get into, but there are almost always people and. You know, David, I mean, he was almost like on his way to sainthood. Here's a guy who had a perfect 4.0 in college, 4.0 grade point average. He scored in the top five of on the CPA exam in the country, among the top five in the country. He became the youngest CFO in the history of Sacramento Savings Bank at the age of 29. Hmm. His first wife died of a brain tumor, and she was a nurse, and he created scholarships in her name to help educate future nurses. He never had a parking ticket, and then just suddenly he gets turned into a monster, and that of course is the arc of the whole thing. It's almost like a journey where I'm alongside Kim, and we, what I'm wondering is, if I had had the same kind of brain chemistry that David had, and if I had ingested the cocktail of drugs that he ingested, could I have done something equally as monstrous, you know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's just how could this happen? And are there similar cases? And there are multiple similar cases. So,
well, that's the thing. I mean, as soon as I saw the cover of the book, there's the two little girls. They're so cute on the cover of the book. And you think, how is this guy must have been a monster. But as you described, for lack of another term, basically squeaky clean. And I want to, you know, delve into that a little bit more, but I just want to take a quick pause to remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. This is The Public Eye. I'm Alvonia Host. My guest this week is author Edward Jones III. His new book is Medication, Mental Illness, and Murder, The True Story of David and Kim Crespi, husband and wife team. David, dealing with personal struggles, was on a host of, as Edward has pointed out, a cocktail of many different antidepressant drugs, took the lives of his two little young five-year-old twins. Ed, you brought up a good point. This is not an isolated, okay, this one was, you know, chronicled in your book. It probably caught the attention, especially, you know, around the neighborhood and the region where you live and where they lived. So not everybody gets wind of this, but this is really, this happens quite often, does it not?
It does indeed. And the case also caught the attention of Oprah Winfrey, and Oprah Winfrey did an hour-long show on the case. There are so many cases similar to this. What I wanted to share with you and your listeners, though, about the David Crespi case, because this is a common thing that people need to be aware of. This was a preventable tragedy. 15 hours before David killed his twin daughters, he was exhibiting the classic symptoms of something called akathisia. Akathisia. Akathisia basically means the inability to sit still, fidgety, walking around. So David was playing a board game with his family, including his two little girls, 15 hours before he killed those little girls. And the family noticed that he was pacing restlessly throughout the house, pacing. And then later his wife, Kim, said he was jumping in and out of bed and walking around this rug, making sure he hit the four corners and all that kind of stuff. Mm. What that is people should know that if somebody's doing that, they are in danger of hurting themselves or others. It's like a blaring signal should be going off.
Yeah, yeah.
But they had no idea what that was, and why didn't they know what it was? It's because the pharmaceutical companies have for decades covered up that this is a potential side effect of SSRI antidepressants.
This is the part that I find to be this is the minefield, as you just said. They see the signs. They know he's already on medication. So, I mean, in my mind, I'd be sitting there saying, okay, he's a little erratic right now. He's a little restless. So she's a little restless. But, you know, thank God, you know, he or she is on medications. Well, right. It sounds like, and I want to get your sense on this, it sounds like the medications were probably part and parcel of what ticked him off, what sent him off to commit such a heinous crime, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, the side effects of and people need to know this, the most dangerous time. So he had just started a course of Prozac 7 days prior to this. And that's the most dangerous time. And in case after case, what happens is these drugs, and these are rare cases, can cause violent ideations and actions. There is serious clinical evidence that this is true. And I want people to know that I get this information from, not from any kind of conspiracy theorist, let me tell you that. Four writers, authorities that have Massachusetts connections. But anyway, I'm probably going too long.
Well, but so with that said, and you had hit upon something that really caught my attention, and that is that the pharmaceutical companies, by the way, very, you know, and I'm not taking a stab at anybody. I want to make that very clear. That's not the intent here. But, you know, pharmaceutical industry is a very profitable industry. And I'm not saying that they intentionally sell drugs that would set people like David Crespi off. That's not the case. But, you know, if I was someone sitting in the courtroom, if I was someone sitting in judgment, I'd be thinking to myself, don't they have, aren't they responsible in some way, some fashion for what happened? Should doctors have been, you know, brought to the forefront and questioned on this? I mean, you know, two little girls lost their lives. A man is spending the rest of his life in prison. A family has been devastated. You know, who do you hold accountable, Edward?
Yeah, that is the question. And I don't know if you and your listeners are aware of a case that happened in Duxbury, Massachusetts, about, 77 miles from where you are?
Mm.
It involves a young mother named Lindsay Clancy. She was a labor and delivery nurse at Massachusetts General Hospital. And this happened in 2023. Mm. She was experiencing postpartum depression, had three young children. So her husband, Patrick, went out to get some food, some takeout food. He comes back, finds her in a heap on the front lawn of their house. She had stabbed herself in the neck, slashed her wrists, and thrown herself out of their two-story window. And so she's in a heap on the ground. He calls 911 and frantically, you know, asks them to come help. And he asks, where are the three children? She says, in the basement. He goes down into the basement, and they're the three little children with bags over their heads and exercise straps around their necks. And they were two out of the three were dead, and the next one died the next day.
Oh, God.
So anyway, she was on Ambien, Valium, Remeron, Trazodone, Prozac.
Oh, my God.
And she, for weeks, Lindsay and Patrick had been trying to get help for the quote-unquote suicidal and homicidal thoughts that Lindsay believed the drugs were causing.
Yeah.
Please help us, they said to the doctors. These drugs are turning me into a zombie, Lindsay said. So anyway, what's going on now is the trial starts up there in January, and the prosecutor, who's a woman, is going after her and saying it was all premeditated, you know, she deserves maybe the death penalty, et cetera.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I could cite so many other cases similar to this, but keep an eye on that one, because our system is so merciless, you know?
Yeah.
In the UK, there are cases like this where the people have been found not criminally responsible for what they did, and they've been released. So, you know, it's our system is merciless, and it also lacks the collective intelligence to deal with a case like this, because you have, you know, the F. Scott Fitzgerald's definition of intelligence was the ability to hold two contradictory ideas in one's head simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be able to hold in your head, as with the David Crespi case, A, Lindsay Clancy killed her three kids. B, Lindsay Clancy was the first victim.
Yeah, being heavily on all the medications, and you're right. It just, I mean, it's very hard. And I'm sure you experienced this, because you wrote, you know, as you wrote the book about the Crespis, you could sit there and literally say, you know, I didn't see this in David Crespi, but he was obviously no good. But in fairness, if you can take an objective approach to this and you look at it and you say, but he wasn't himself. And this inducement of drugs had to have an effect on him, on his ability to think rationally, on his actions, et cetera. I guess, Edward, at the end of the day, it's you know, you can take so many different sides. There is no clear-cut answer here. But obviously, if you're not in your right mind, I guess some people would question, well, then how can you hold that individual responsible?
Absolutely.
Let me ask you, did you personally, you knew the family well.
Yes.
After you heard that and in writing the book, did you ever have a different opinion of David Crespi?
Not really. No, I write about this in the book. So after it happened, I decided to go to the Superior Court hearing that would determine his fate. Okay. So, and at the time, you know, I had heard about Ambien, Patrick Kennedy, Teddy Kennedy's son, had an incident in Washington, D.C., where he, like, rammed his car into some kind of barrier or something, and it turned out he was on Ambien, and I discovered that Ambien is, implicated in a lot of accidents and things like that. But I thought that, at the time, I thought, you know, Prozac and other antidepressants were happy pills, you know, miracle drugs.
Yeah.
So I went to that Superior Court hearing with an open mind. It's like, you know, how guilty was David Crespi? You know, how premeditated was this, and what factor did these drugs play? Well, try to cut to the chase here. They went through all the. I mean, they basically revealed that he had several bouts with depression, and almost every time he had taken drugs, he had had some kind of adverse reaction. But I came to the conclusion at the end of the hearing, which was about 8 hours long, it was like the scales fell from my eyes, and it was clearly the drugs were the cause of the tragedy.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah. But he is still the sentence was upheld, though, right? Life without parole.
Yeah, two consecutive.
Yeah, so he's never going to see the light, as they say, the light of day. And you know, as we wind down here this evening, it's so difficult. I mean, you saw this firsthand. I'm reading the book. I'm hearing the story, you know, from you. As you said, many people right here in Massachusetts, a case coming up. And it'd be so easy. It would be so easy, Edward, and you know this better than anybody, to just say, you know, they're no good. They're, you know, obviously, rotten from the time that they were born, and this is the culmination of it, this evil that they committed, and that's not always the case. We just got a few moments left, but let me ask you: is there when you write something like this? Hopefully, it's read by many people. Does something like this ever catch the attention, as you said, of the judicial system, of the criminal law community, where they take a hard look? I mean, this is not isolated. This isn't the first time a case like this came up. Does anybody have any inclination, you especially, after writing the book, that there'll be changes made in how the courts view this?
Here's hoping. Yeah. There's a recent case out in Idaho where it all involves informed consent. And everybody needs to hear this. As a patient, you have the legal right to informed consent. That means your doctor, if he or she is going to put you on drugs like this or any other kind, they need to tell you about the pros and the cons.
Hmm.
And what the
consequences? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Exactly. What the negative ones are?
Yeah,
et cetera. So, in this case out in Idaho, that was not done, and basically the Supreme Court of Idaho basically made the entity that the people sued to pay for all the court causes and all. So that's a precedent-setting case. And back in 1997, there was a precedent-setting case. A guy named Donald Shell killed his entire family after taking only a few tabs of Paxil, I think it was. And the lawyers found that the drug company had had deliberately hidden the side effects of the drugs. So this was 1997, and the jury came back with a $6.4 million settlement on behalf of the family.
Mm.
So there's some precedents out there that any lawyers in your audience can look at, but the one in Idaho, the name is Mattson, M-A-T-T-S-O-N. So Google that one.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that tragedies like this, what ignites people's thinking to look at things in a different light.
Yeah.
In this case, the two little Crespi girls, lost their lives. That in itself, nothing's going to bring them back. The tragedy is something that will stay with, especially the mom, for the rest of her life. You wrote the book. You knew them personally, so I'm sure it's had an effect on you too. But I always say, it's a sad story, but one that needs to be read in order for people to realize this is real life. This happens, and to make any kind of changes and to alter the approach on how we look at this kind of these kind of situations. You need to read books like that. So with that said, Ed, the book Medication, Mental Illness, and Murder, what really killed the Crespi twins, that's the new book. If people want to pose questions to you directly, get more information about you, Ed, how might they do that?
Please go to my website, and that is lowercase edwardleejones.com, edwardleejones.com, and there's a contact tab there, and so yeah, you can fill out a form there, and send me a message, and we can start a dialogue that way.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, I mean, I think people from time to time, many of our listeners really get affected by many of the stories. And want to get more information, and this way, Edward's put it right out there how you can reach directly, get more information about him, the research he did on the book, and of course reading the book itself. Any questions about the broadcast? You can certainly give us a call here at the studios, WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the Public Eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.